see you coming back in here with ducking jumpsies. I want to see you coming back in here with bloodstained jumpsies.
Look at anybody going sitting in a paint with those boys after that.
And the referee is looking around and acting as Mickey.
Tell the children to play tennis or something.
If they want to play tennis, go and play tennis.
Well, how's it going? Welcome to the Three Men Weave the Balls at the EGA podcast. Morris Brosnan here. We've got a brilliant show lined up and two sterling editions here with me. Mark Friday, how are we doing?
Not too bad.
Very warm studio.
Yeah, it's very warm in general, really, isn't it?
Yeah, the midges are an absolute disgrace already. I'm telling you, I went to training on Thursday evening. I was going, Jesus, that's decent weather. That's the first good evening we've had. God, you could have midges that night. And then I thought, ah, no, sure, it's only the middle of April. Well, my God, my legs were on fire for the next 3 days. I still have itches. Look at my elbow.
You're
midget scars.
You're an amateur. You have to spray in the bonnet, or not in the bonnet, in the glove compartment.
I had the spray in my bag and just never put on my gun out because I didn't think to be about yet. There was no warning.
Mick McCarthy is here too. Mick, how's fun? Are you bothered by the midges as well?
Do you know what? I actually got a midgy attack like 11 o'clock in the morning on a walk that I was doing in Wexford there.
Jesus,
on Easter
mad.
Sunday. You never see them in the morning. It was a very strange one. Now they're fully out. It's April midges is not what I expected to be talking about, I have to say.
Yeah, the GA need to do something about it.
It's worrying about fixtures and stuff. What are they doing about the midges?
Coming up on today's show, we're going to chat about targeting players and look back at some of your great comments that you sent in to us last week. We'll look at some GA documentaries that are coming and ones that we want to see happen. And we're going to catch up with Eddie Renan, Mick, who is really unusual in that we've seen Eddie Renan, the player and the pundit. And now we're going to see Eddie Renan, the coach, with Laois in the Dunbar-Donegal this year.
Yeah, his third act.
Yeah.
So we've kind of seen the complete hurling man. Yeah, so... really interesting. They had a good league. They stayed up. Ren, Dublin very close. Got to the quarterfinals. Gave Limerick a pretty good game. You know,
in the quarterfinal,
well beaten. But we're in the game for a long time. So interesting to see because they were coming off a pretty poor couple of years, having been a contender. You know, having been a team that you were expecting to give Leinster Championship teams a run for their money like 3-4 years ago. So there's a lot to work with there. So looking forward to catching up with Eddie. Yeah, we know what he thinks about the game because we've been watching him on TV for about 5 years, you know?
Yeah, he's as a player, he probably earned a reputation as being this out-and-out, outrageous goal scorer, which would you would hope would pay for a really helpful style as a manager, I guess.
Yeah, I hope so, yeah. It's just always go for goal, lads, you know? But that was, honestly, if you think of anyone, you think of Eddie Brennan, right? He could have done anything in his career. He could have won Hurler of the Year 5 times in a row, and all he'll ever be remembered for, and it's not a bad thing to be remembered for, is Eddie Brennan will get you a goal. What a man to get a goal. A goal scorer, natural goal scorer, like his soccer kind of, comparison, Kilkenny really lack a natural goal scorer now, just someone who's in the position. And yet my biggest memory of him is in the 2011 All-Ireland final where he just broke through that unbelievable kind of counter-attack solo run on the right side and gave a lovely pass in to Richie Hogan, who scored. So an assist is what I remember Eddie by, but then again, I'm a hurling dork, so.
All in all, striker, yeah. I think the goal scoring one is an interesting one, right? Because I think it's a lot of them are just ones that stand out in your own head. It's such a subjective category. First one that's come to my mind is Seamus Callaghan because he destroyed Galway and eventually we had to spear tackle him into the floor to stop him.
that was when Galway beat Seamus Callaghan by a point in the All-Ireland semi-final. What a match that was. That's probably the best individual performance I can ever remember witnessing live, I have to say.
By Seamus Callaghan?
Yeah.
Wow, that's interesting. Yeah.
Eddie has had plenty to say as well on social media and in post-match interviews this year already, so it'll be interesting to get his take on all the hot topics of the Hurling Championship.
Yeah, we'll get to it in a minute, but I do have to say that I do enjoy the fact that just because Eddie is a manager now, he's not turned off his social media.
Oh, it's brilliant.
Because if people can stand by what they believe in, they can say it without real fear of consequences, but everybody's always just so conservative and afraid. It's great to see that he's still willing to at least just give his opinion. It's not that they're too out there anyway, they're pretty common sense, but let us know what you think.
Definitely.
Before we move on to that, we're going to look back at last week's show when we talked about targeting players on Cavan, because we've had developments, Mark.
We have. So I think it was just after really the show was put up last week. I think it was on Wednesday or Thursday afternoon we got an email that, so like we were saying last week, the Cavan set up for the league is that there are certain matches at the start of the year that are designated as county player games. So for these games, you have a county players available, and then the others are fixed as well in the master fixture plan. you can see who they're going to be playing against, and there'll be no county players available. So next weekend, as in this weekend coming, sorry, was scheduled to be round five. County players are meant to be available, and we were informed that round five has been postponed to a date that is yet to be set, and round six has been brought forward to this weekend coming with no county players. So it's interesting that even though they didn't just say, oh no, we'll make no county players available for this, once that match is assigned at the start of the year that county players available, it has to have county players. And so they just brought one forward. But the main point here being that that there has actually been serious consequence from what Mickey was talking about in terms of players. It was at the request of Mickey Graham that the matches be postponed because there were so many players picking up knocks and getting injured.
And we were asking last week, was this because they were being targeted as county players?
Yeah, and on that team, right, we had two comments in last week. I thought they were interesting. One is from James Higgins, and he said, I think I have a theory that you can't even rough up county players, especially forwards. It's nonsense. They're playing county football where the physicality is way tougher anyway than club football, and they're usually marked by absolute tramps there. So that and so just on that team, right, what happened in Cavan is probably, it's not ideal, but club players still get around the games and the county players are still protected for the league. Now, it does go to show that April for clubs is probably a nonsense, that county players aren't going to be involved anyway. But at least it's sort of like, it's not all bad either. You know, there still is a round of games. It's not like you're doing nothing with this fine weather we have right now.
Oh, yeah. And the other thing on it is, it's actually, if you think of it, Cavan took Club Month, or take Club Month nearly to the extreme, and show as an example of how it can't possibly work. Because whereas we'll just play league, there'll be no championship. Well, that means that there's league matches every weekend. And whereas some of the counties might have a championship match, that might mean that the players are playing, you know, they have a weekend off to play a championship game. I think we talked about it in Sligo last week with Niall Murphy was talking about, where he was saying that they didn't get to play any games the first 2 weeks because there was under 21 championship on, and now they're only playing two weekends. Whereas Cavan lads finished the National League with Cavan and then were straight into club matches, and they have a club match every single week coming down the line. So they've got no break from having played 8 games already in the National League, and also having played the McKenna Cup obviously beforehand. So it is that thing of what are they as human beings meant to do? Can't keep constantly playing.
Eventually there needs to be. Who was that comment from?
That was from James Higgins.
James, sorry. I just would disagree a little bit though, because it's not like it's inter-county teams or ice hockey teams who have goons that are set out to kind of just take out people. You need to have a certain, and also their career, for want of a better word, is is tied up in their performances and everything they do. So some of them are stoppers, but they're not going to be filthy. Whereas if you play, and I've seen it, because especially in kind of lower counties, there is sometimes a wide gap between the levels at senior maybe, or even there's a lot of these players playing intermediate clubs or whatever, where you could have a really kind of old guy, never really much talent, just tough, and that's all he's there for, and he just plays football or hurling for, I don't know why, to go and get into a bit of physicality. And he's got nothing really to lose. And they go and they'll say, well, I'll tell you what now, this guy is going to, he's going to kick 4-4 on me today, but I'll break his leg. And I think that's an extreme, and I don't think anybody's actually going to, I'll break your leg part. But there is the, he'll know he played against me, that I don't know if you get. I think it's a different level. It is more physical at county level, obviously, but it's more dangerous a club.
Yeah, and even
for sure,
it's a totally different mindset. At your club, if you come up against, you know this from playing yourself, if you come up as a county player, you're totally happy to neutralize them. If it's a draw, you're happy because you're not going to win that battle. Whereas in your county, you're probably trying to play your own game and counter them that way. So you're not as paying as close attention to opponents generally, in the majority of cases. Just one other comment that was interesting as well. This was two people discussing together. A guy, Philip Morgan, who talked about, the idea that Mickey Hart is obviously going to come up with a plan to deal with Conor McManus, but special players will always get kind of special attention. And then somebody else responded back and said, is there anything that you could look at in terms of refereeing? Say, for example, Donaghy and O'Shea, because they were bigger, it seemed to be okay that we could target them. And similarly, because Conor McManus is a star forward, it seems to be okay that you can do a bit more with them. If you just applied rules that currently exist, you could probably stamp it out anyway, which I think is an interesting idea.
It's funny, I was listening to, I think it was Ken Early was talking this week about the new Michael Lewis podcast. This is podcast inception here. I'm talking about three podcasts away, true other ones. But they were saying that the basketball example, and they were given obviously football and soccer kind of like example, saying that it's the opposite, that like these players are specially treated and that they get away with everything because they're famous and because they're well known. Are you suggesting that like Conor McManus, you have to, you know, wrestle him into the ground before you win a free because he's expected to look after himself? No. It's funny that it is literally the opposite of what that from other sports that research shows.
Yeah, I not necessarily to agree with that example actually, but I would agree with an example. Like, I think Aidan O'Shea has to work twice as hard to get a free. I think it's probably because he's bigger and people are hanging off him, and he's also like this, you know, star player that
yeah, he's expected that he can handle it. Like,
yeah, but yeah. But like, I mean, surely you apply the same values to him as you apply to anybody else. And just to go back, like, before we move on, all of this is talking about special attention. None of it is dirty stuff. Like, we're not like, if Aidan O'Shea gets a punch in the face, they're going to pull it regardless of his size or his stature.
The other thing, though, just as well as this, and like injuries, corn, it doesn't have to be about getting special treatment or players being overly physical. If you're playing 12, 13 weekends out of 15 matches, 15 weekends, you're going to pick up minor strains. You're going to pick up, you know, just tired legs.
Yeah.
And again, as Mickey Rimmer said, he was only talking about lads missing a week or two of training, but just saying how big an effect that can have. You've only got 4 weeks now until they play Monaghan, so missing 2 weeks of it, that's half your preparation gone.
It all leads into the ultimate, you know, the original problem that GA can't solve at the moment is like, that's what county managers are going to worry about, and that's probably what the majority of people interested in GA in the county are going to be worried about. But then clubs die and are dying because of it. So I still don't know if it's as simple a solution as we all suggest it always is, because that's still going to always be a factor, yeah. Isn't it?
One quick thing as well, just on Club Month. It was interesting seeing the Down League last weekend. Kilcoo beat Ross Trevor 1-5 to 6 points. Not a
classic.
Not a classic by any means. No. But it was just notable because it was Mickey Moran's Kilcoo against Pete McGrath's Ross Trevor. So that's like a GA managerial legends derby up and down.
Yeah, I think oftentimes in Galway as well, you'd get like managers who would have been heavily involved in the county setup go down and end up managing in the county. So you get like Val Daly managing Sot Hill or this kind of thing, where you just have like absolute legends who are probably tailing off a small bit but can't step away entirely, kind of yeah. Ease themselves out of it by managing clubs.
But we like to think it's Monaghan, but it's really me.
Yeah.
Like, we hate me.
The one part of being a dub that stayed with me has been a general kind of
hatred of Meath.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, we hate me. And like, my grandmother, who's 99 this year, absolutely despises me. No, the way I hate Meath, you know, that team that you would have hated in the 90s. Like, we hate me. Like, one of the reasons we hate me was hair and everything else flying. Why do you hate me? Like, we hate me. People at Kells lined the streets to welcome us back. We're throwing stones at the car. Why do you hate me? We can hate me, but we can respect me.
Yeah.
Like, we hate me.
We hate me.
We're going to talk about GA documentaries in a second, but before I do, I'd just ask you to rate and review this podcast. You can subscribe to, you're probably listening to this podcast through the Boz.ie podcast platform. We also have a Boz.ie GA podcast where we have other long form interviews and things on that as well, so you can subscribe to that too. But on the theme of GA documentaries, lads, so Colm O'Rourke last weekend in his column for the Sunday Indo wrote about a documentary. I didn't know this was actually coming, and it's about Meath and Down in the 91 final. This is a really good idea, right? So this documentary is about those two teams, but it's written with the idea of looking at where they are in terms of their health now. So the whole idea behind this is that Donald O'Neill contacted about him initially. So it's the idea is kind of looking at, like, they're calling it extra time post your career, but a kind of a legendary rivalry, that 91 All-Ireland final. So they talked about it with their doctor, who had a great day that day. And it's the whole point of this is, like, if it can save one life or make someone aware that they had a problem and needed help, it would all be worthwhile. So they're looking at the health of all the players who are involved in that game. It's a totally different angle to stuff we've seen before. So I think, A, it's a brilliant game to pick initially, and B, it's a really worthy cause. It could be like another one of these kind of epic GA documentaries, which we've had a few of in recent years.
Yeah. It's funny, when you said that to me, I didn't think of it as in that particular angle at all, because there is an obvious story in that they're... I suppose it's one of the most storied All-Ireland finals, not because of the match, but because of the two teams.
Yeah.
So Down kind of coming from nowhere and starting that crazy Ulster run of the 1990s, which would be bookended by them in 91, 94. And, you know, an All-Ireland for all those great players like Mickey Linden and James McCartan, et cetera, et cetera. And then Mead, who were coming off the back of the end of their greatest ever run and, you know, the four games against Dublin and all of the insane amount of football that they played to basically fall into an All-Ireland final half exhausted or so. That's here we go. So I think in itself, that's a brilliant story. But if you're kind of adding this angle onto it, I actually don't know too much about the health of any of these guys either. So I don't know the relevance of it.
Well, I'll tell you why I think this is a really nice angle to take on it, right? Because I think the best GAA documentaries are ones that kind of add, like all for the everyman like myself, kind of looking at GA, there's a small bit of like a alternative reality about it. You know, it's kind of like pick these icons on a screen that you don't really understand to have like as people, and they always talk about that in the GA anyway. But what a good documentary is, it's like a good interview. Like it kind of humanizes that, and you understand the quirks behind them, or what, you know, they were thinking at the time, what they did, like how Paddy O'Shea's style of management and how he's, you know, balling lads out at training on Thursday nights and stuff like that. They're the best GA documentaries. It's something that we didn't get. If you look at like the Jim McGuinness documentary, we didn't get that. Like, we didn't get any insight into what made them tick or what really they did differently to achieve this as our success. Whereas we kind of did get that in the Paddy O'Shea example. And yeah, I would hope that you would kind of get the same element in a documentary like this.
So this one is Sunderland 2, I Died to Jim McGuinness's Manchester City documentary.
Like, there's probably a world of unearthed GAA documentaries. There's great stories that we should, like, this idea should be welcomed, because they nearly always do well, even if they're not the best produced things. There's some nice elements to them that make them kind of always worth watching.
I love Lake O'Gale, right? I do. I enjoy watching it. I enjoy it every time. But there is a kind of a format of, and then I won this All-Ireland, and then I won this All-Ireland. And that's there's nothing wrong with it whatsoever. But I do feel that there's probably that lack of sort of 30 for 30 style, yeah, kind of storytelling in GA. That, as we've talked about for a long number of years, there's some amazing audio and radio documentaries in the GA, and people should, like, you know, seek them out. There's like brilliant ones going back in the years. There's very few really, really good football ones that are done outside of that kind of format, where it's just telling a linear story. You know, so the more of them, the better. I think there's plenty of scope for them anyway. Over, like, if you get real filmmakers to go in, like a Ross Whittaker and what he did with Katie Taylor, you know, like, you love to see that in a GAA story.
And I suppose a lot of that is probably down to access. On that team, right, is there any stories or ideas that you would have loved to have seen made into documentaries, like whether that be now or in the past?
I have a few here.
Okay.
Could be hoiling through all these.
How many of them are about Cavan?
Actually, none of them. I have ones that would be. I have a great one about Cavan, but I don't want to tell you, because I'm going to.
Fair
make
enough. Yeah.
But some of them was, and one of them actually came from with Charlie Gallagher and trying to qualify for the Wembley at Whit, it was called, which was for about 30 years, or no, maybe I think it was only about 20. The GA would rent Wembley from the English FA and play an exhibition match on, I presume when it was Wembley at Whit, it was the Whit weekend, which is the bank holiday weekend in June. And it's just really interesting. It would be 40,000 were at one of the games. And it could be just great to go through the different stories of the matches that were played over there, the Irish diaspora that were already living there that would go to them, and also the fact that there were qualifying matches to get to this, that, like, you know, what a big event it would be to be going over in the, you know, I think it started in 1958, might have been the first one. So you're going over in the late 50s, all through the 60s, to represent your county over in London.
Class.
Yeah, I didn't actually know that story. That sounds great. We should do that.
See, that's the problem with this piece.
We're going to do all of these. These are all copyrighted, by the way. These are my, I've got
patent
them written
pending,
down
patent,
here.
Pending, yeah, patent pending, pending,
patent pending. Do you want another one?
Yeah, go for
Let's keep the theme of abroad, hurling in America. There are, hurling seems to take on, I don't know what the word is, capture people's imagination abroad a lot more than football does. I wonder why. But there are mad things. Like in Milwaukee, they have a massive hurling club, and every Halloween they have Hurloween, where they play a match of hurling, dressed up in fancy dress. And then obviously, like, things like, say America, North America, the continent, because you have the different stories about how ice hockey came from the sport of hurling.
Yeah.
So it would be interesting to delve into that and see if
I played hurling in America, and we went to a tournament up in Mississippi. I was living in Kansas City at the time, and I got asked to play with Kansas, so we went up to Mississippi for a weekend. And there was a lad on the team with me who he'd moved over from Tipperary, right? And he bought a house for $5,000 in Kansas. And he was living on this house. He was one of the maddest and best people I've ever met in my life. But at the very end of it, two of us were driving back. And he said, what do you do anyway? I said, oh, I want to be a sports journalist. He said, oh, yeah, one of my best friends is playing football. You should interview him. I'll give you his number. And I was like, who's this? He's like, oh, Shane Long. He's like, I don't know if you know him, but if you do, you can give him a call and you tell him John told me to ring him.
Sorry, I'm still reeling at the Hurloween thing. I think Christy Ring just had a solid 360 in his coffin.
I didn't look it up. Look it up. It's on our site. I think it's like Facts About the GA Abroad is the name of the article or something. But you'll see a man dressed in, you know, those giant teddy bear costumes. Just he's got the head of a teddy bear. And I think the lad defending him is wearing a fairy costume or something.
See, they're all great stories, right? Like, they're like kind of nostalgic, uplifting stories in a way that some of these ones that we're talking about are. Whereas I think the best sports documentaries oftentimes are ones that are bad stories that don't end well. So that's why, like, I'd love to see a documentary about Gerlach Nan's stint at Galway. And there's so many strands to that story, like how the club rivalries within it. You could talk about a year or two later, you know, Joe Canning, speaking about targeting players, Joe McDaniel got some like pretty appalling treatment in a club final a year or two later after that as well. Like, you could delve into that angle of it. Obviously, like anything with Nan is going to be great anyway, so you get him to reminisce on that and talk about some of his own thoughts on what he thought of that team at the time. And then you could get the players who aren't playing anymore, so they might be more willing to open up and tell you what they thought all of that. I think that's another one that's also ours. Don't take that. Yeah.
Can we talk about the fact that Clare beat Galway in a qualifier when Loughnane was manager? It was one of the maddest results I've ever seen. Like, I mean, it was, Clare were in absolute disarray and where everything was going wrong, and then they suddenly, I think the Galway team was changed after the parade or something like that. It was just bonker stuff, like, and I think that would be actually a brilliant thing to go and look into a little bit more and to see what was actually going on around then, because none of it was making any sense. It was just this weird time. But because sometimes when it's happening in June and July rather than August and September, we don't have as strong a memory of it, you know.
Yeah, and I suppose like a lot of these documentary ideas, you probably need the best thing about them often is live footage. And now I still think you can do them retrospectively and they could still be great, but this, I suppose, also precedent, and people should give us access and then we could release these in 10 years. And
yeah, let's do it.
Yeah, a couple more. I had thought of the Mayo Dublin rivalry definitely needs like a best of rivals ESPN 30 for 30 treatment. You could even go back to them arguing, fighting over the hill 10 years ago, then Mayo randomly beating them in the quarterfinals after they won the Ireland in 2010. Another one would be just when we have mentioned Eddie Brennan coming up on the show. Like, how great would it be to follow a hurling team like the Galway documentary when they won the All-Ireland, but not a hurling team like Clare or whoever that are kind of outsiders for the All-Ireland, but someone who's in the Joe McDonagh Cup, who's in Division 2 of the league, who are going for promotion, like Westmeath or Carlow last year would have been perfect candidates for it.
Yeah, I don't mean to interrupt, I just think I have the exact same idea, except it's on the other end of the spectrum, and it's Offaly till I die. Except not calling it Offaly, but like you just wouldn't get the access and they'd be mad to give it to you. But can you imagine how good and I literally mean the word documentary, because it's like documented history, that it would be to be inside the Offaly camp, you know, through the league into this season when they're in that lower level for the first time, and there's just all the talk is crisis and disaster and one worse thing than another, you know. And I just think that I would love to see that. And it would be the hardest thing to make in the world, but it would be absolutely unbelievable.
Yeah, definitely. Damien Lawler has a book on following the Waterford or Waterford Footballers, which is of a similar theme.
Brilliant book.
And one more is actually how I ended up on the Wembley of Wit thing, is that Paul Fitzpatrick from the Anglo-Celt is writing a book on Charlie Gallagher, who was a former Cavan player, who's one of the greatest Gaelic footballers of all time. Yet, like our theme from the last couple of weeks of underappreciated players, most people would have never heard of him. And he was in they're not updated since 2008, but as of 2008, he was like the seventh or eighth highest scorer in the history of the Ulster Championship. And like, it would be great to do a documentary. I think maybe it's just one, so it's not the Laker Gale thing of just one person's story the whole way through, but just one documentary on like the greatest GA players you probably have that history of maybe forgotten. Or
made them so good, because isn't the GA thing, especially of the old days, you're saying, Morris, about needing the kind of live footage and stuff like that. But the other part of it is when that isn't available and it's a historical story, I think it's the what somebody meant to people. Yeah. So it's like that story of like, I drove to see Ring.
So the stories of him, the people that would like around the country would go just to see him play. And actually, that's how I ended up, the Wembley Whit thing was he scored 2-10 in a qualifier once and carried him across for Cavan to qualify to play in Wembley.
There you go, 2-10. I have a few as well. And I mentioned, you know, we mentioned earlier, is like, you know, there's a few that I eventually would like to actually get off my arse and make that I wouldn't like to kind of talk about before they're not even to give away, but before they're developed, I suppose. Yeah. You know, but one that I don't think I would ever have the ability in you know my own geography and other things to make that I always think would be a great, I'd love somebody else to do, is a documentary about the Down team that won three All-Irelands in the 1960s. And there's so much to it as well. It's pre-Troubles Northern mm-hmm. Ireland. There's, you know, the fact, the way their victory, especially the first one, was greeted. And the way they, you know, were welcomed into the county by people on both sides of the aisle, for want of a better word. How this became a kind of a cross-community celebration, if not something that both sides participated in, you know. There is also just amazing characters in that. Maurice Hayes, who died recently, who people will know from European politics, you know, but he was basically the first kind of GEA county secretary. He was a team builder, you know. He kind of created the modern county structure of, you know, by doing that with Down. You had Sean O'Neill, you know, probably one of the best players of all time that nobody ever talks about. You had Kerry's inability to beat them in finals that kind of continued on into the 90s and even into the, you know, 2010 when they lost to them again in the quarter final. You know, so there's just a million strands to this, and just the fact that Ulster football was, other than Cavan, football in the six counties was just this kind of like non-entity, could not get going, was always the weaker province, was the one that you wanted to draw in the All-Ireland semi-final, and then Down come out of nowhere and won three All-Irelands in the space of 8 years or whatever.
And they're like, the effect of it's still been felt today. Like, Down are the only team that could just randomly end up in an All-Ireland final out of nowhere, as proven if you think of the 2010 final. Yeah. It's like, there's no, like, I can't remember the last time any other county like that just decided, oh, do you know what, we might get to the final this year.
Yeah. And just a huge draw for them around the country that goes back to, I think, a lot from in our era from the 90s, but I think, you know, I think that leads from the 60s, that sort of, you know, that there is this sort of, you know, Down are the kind of everybody's second team. They might not be, but they're definitely up there among everybody's kind of favourite counties. Like, you know, I think that stems from that amazing story. And I'd love to get the entire story one time, more, not just the kind of the 20-minute interview that you listen to every now and then.
Yeah, I'm sold. So if anyone's listening and willing to fund this, just get in touch and I'll go and do it myself. We're going to talk about Eddie Brennan in a minute, but before we do, there's been moves made in GA underage development this week, which are pretty interesting. So both Christy O'Connor and Mike Quirk have articles this week about kind of what's effectively going to be a huge kind of overhaul from looking at underage development programs and, you know, county structures there. It all started with Brian Cuthbert, who's actually the former Cork manager, who's heading all of this. So he's kind of talked about, this is really interesting. So he was asked about, he gave a presentation in 2018 about whether or not development is serving players best. And he said, put up a picture of Henry Shefflin. And he said, if I saw Shefflin at 17, there's a good chance I'd have pushed him away. We're so focused on today and tomorrow that we don't think about next year or the year after that. Sport is about being patient. Coaching is about patience. But I think we're in a bubble that wants instant gratification. We want to win today. This is not about winning today. It's about long-term player development. And Shefflin is in that bracket of players like elite level players like Conor McManus or Brian Fenton, who never got a crack at Weiner and ended up having phenomenal success. But every time you see these lists the whole time on Twitter of, you know, the 15 players who never got to play Weiner but went on to play county, and I always think, like, they're an accident. They didn't get there through a pathway or a program. Like, they got there by a stroke of luck. Brian Fenton got there because Desi Farrell had a conversation with a club player who said, by the way, my club mate is flying now, you should have him in. Like, that's accidental. I suppose the point is that there's a huge amount of players outside of that who probably miss out because they weren't in that program initially, and that maybe if we had a total overhaul of this win at all costs mentality that kind of is strife, especially in the GAA, that maybe you would catch them.
Yeah, definitely. And like, the thing is, then, is what's the development for? Because if it's trying to just develop, like, do you take, say, which has been the case often with some counties where they might take in a development squad at under 14 level, and that's the same development, like, roughly the same development squad you'll see in six, seven years' time when they're up at under 21s. And it's just trying to focus on these few elite players that are in the county and try and turn them into your county senior team. Or is it that every single player that's at under 14 level gets the same level of coaching from county board experts, county board coaching officers, and develop them all together? Because people obviously develop at different rates, and some of the skills that are, you know, the need, like, obviously at like 14, you can have a lad that's 6'2" and is going to dominate there, whereas someone hasn't had a hit puberty yet or had a growth spurt could be really skillful and then just gets left behind because the, and that's how you end up with a load of athletic flyers, as we call them, and very few skilled forwards in, at senior level.
Just on that team, right? I'm veering on Mark levels of bringing it back to my own county, but in Galway, they've changed their underage hurling development, and they, so now what they do, like, Galway obviously have won a huge amount of minors recently with Jeff Linsky, and now Brian Hanley's in there, and he's gone up to the under-20s. But at the same time, they've got an underage development structure where from under 14, they are bringing players in for these programs, right? So that does happen. But they bring in about 250 players at under 14, and they narrow it down to about 50. And then every single year after that, that makeup changes by about 10 to 15 every single year. So they're constantly expanding. All these players are going back to their clubs, and they're upskilling coaches at the same time. So there's a general, like, a rising tide all across the board, but it's not just catered to one or two or a small elite group. Like, they're trying to cast their net as far as possible just to get everybody playing and developing at the same rate, and then because of that, it just rises the whole standard of hurling as a whole. So that's why, like, we've had a conversation on this show about, you know, why are these, like, hurlers from Moycullen or hurlers from Barn or footballers from the West suddenly coming into Galway? That's why, because they've suddenly cast the net a lot wider and aren't focusing on an elite few. They're kind of taking a more holistic approach. My point, by the way, right, is that A, that obviously is developmental for players in terms of, like, the pure point of coaching, which is to get people to enjoy the game. But B, it actually does have a knock-on effect in terms of making teams better at when they get to a senior level. Like, if you've, it makes perfect sense. If you've got a wider base, you're just naturally going to have more players available for your senior team.
Yeah, I think they're really good points. I especially think Mark's, like, you know, who are you going to coach? Like, is it these people that you think are going to be good, or does everybody deserve coaching, and does everybody deserve to get to the best of their level, even if it's not a full-on county level? One thing that I'd say, though, is, you know, the people that you say maybe were found by accident, like the Henry Shefflin or Brian Fenton, obviously they're people at those talent levels weren't going to stay hidden forever, but they're also guys that are physically big and will, you know, naturally kind of develop. Whereas I think there's a lot of smaller players that will be dismissed at that level and will never be found. And the reason for that is because they miss out on that 2-3 year development where they can physically grow with programs and whatever. And also not even necessarily always grow, but adapt to a game at that level. If you're smaller, you have to play it in a certain way or whatever, but you need to be taught how to do that. And then suddenly they're 19, 20 and they've all the skills in the world, but they're too slight and they're just not able to impact on the game because they're so small. I think that's when you miss out on those players and then you never find them. And that's kind of to your original point about, like, what about everyone that slips through completely? And widening the net, I think especially for the more kind of diminutive player, is one of the best things that could possibly happen.
And especially even the lads who, there's always the great one of the great players at club level who they just didn't have the pace for county level.
Yeah.
And, like, that's well and good saying that if you spot a lad at 22, 23, it's very hard to change that. But if you spot him at 16 and you could actually put a, like, it'll take 5-6 years to improve a player's speed. But it is possible. They're never going to train to Speedy Gonzalez or whatever. But, like,
no, but it's true.
If you looked at it over 6 years rather than over the next 2 years or a year.
Or a day.
Or just even approach it in a more scientific way than, you know, he doesn't have natural pace.
Yeah.
That, like, a cliche from the 1970s that still is in punditry especially. And because of that, probably most levels of coaching. So just a little bit more of a scientific approach to it and see if you can actually develop pace. Like, yeah.
We might chat about this more later on in the year. I know the Connacht GAA hurling director is Damien Coleman, so we could even try and get in touch with him and have him on the show. But next we're going to chat to Eddie Brennan of the Laois Hurlers.
Well, you were fucked over the line twice. Fucked over the line like you'd catch a fucking loaf of bread and fucked you over the line with his shorts up. And what that does is it lifts the opposition. We don't want to see no Westmeath man fucked about. Is that clear now, Alan? No more.
All right, I'm delighted to say we're joined now by Laois manager Eddie Brennan. Eddie, how's the form?
All good, yeah, sure. The sun is shining and championship is getting close, so sure, look, it's the time of year that you look forward to, really.
That's we might start there. That's an interesting point, I suppose, because like Leash are in a unique example in that, you know, a lot of teams prioritize the league or prioritize the championship, and ye probably are trying to, would it be fair to say, trying to, you know, prioritize both.
Yeah, I think you're always, I suppose, when you're in a new role, maybe you're certainly trying to get the maximum out of it. And you know, we kind of set out, you know, at the start of the year, we definitely wanted to stay put and stay in the top, you know, top level hurling for the National League next year. And you know, we achieved that. And then, you know, obviously the big one then, and no matter where you're going, it's championship. It's all about championship. So I think once one gets tidied up and gets finished, you know, you're very quickly focusing on that. And it, probably the league is always geared towards championship anyway, because you're looking at kind of setting down, you know, the backbone of your team, and probably, you know, filling out positions and having a look at guys. So at this time of the year now, it's just about really... just keeping tabs on fellas with injuries and form is probably everything, you know. So you're just looking at guys and how well they're going at this time of year.
Yeah, so were you happy with the league as a whole? Obviously, like the qualifying showing was probably as much as you'd hoped for initially.
Yeah, look, I suppose the finish of it was, you know, it was disappointing because, you know, like I said, we had a lot of wides on the night against Limerick, but look, they are All-Ireland champions, and yes, it wasn't a full-strength team, but It was a good education for our guys from that perspective. Like I was, like all the time, like when we played Waterford, Galway and Limerick in that match, you knew it was going to be a very, very tough one to get a result out of. And all I could ask for the players was that they applied themselves from start to finish, and that was going to be no thrown in the towel. And from where we are and the starting base that Leash are, I was pleased with that. You know, if you had to say to me that we were going to hit 17 or 18 wides against Limerick, you'd have been disappointed and said, look, we could have probably got another 1-4, 1-5 out of that. And then at the same token, look, that's probably maybe fair of where an All-Ireland team are and the competition that they are. But overall, look, I was pleased with the campaign. I felt we were fierce and lucky at stages, because definitely the Dublin match was one that, you know, that I suppose finishing with 14 men was probably, you know, it helped Dublin because we really pulled out a massive performance that day. And you know, the Carlow match again with a lot of wide, so definitely there was huge positives to take from that campaign.
It's funny you mentioned the Dublin match, Eddie, though, because that's what I was going to ask you. Because for me, looking from the outside, you know, you mentioning, like, you know, Limerick and Waterford and Galway, and there's probably always going to be, you know, a gulf there. But I suppose Dublin, you know, in the rest of the league, the story of 1B was nearly Dublin bringing themselves back to that level and so that we put them into that conversation again. But you guys, when you look at that game, and as you said, that was a game you probably should have won, you know, you probably gave them as big a scare as they're getting. You proved that you guys were on that level, at least on that day. That must have been very, even though the result didn't go your way, when you look back at the overall kind of progress of how you've got on in the few months that you've been there, that must be something that gives you a lot of encouragement to know that, you know, you can really live with a team kind of on the level of Dublin.
Absolutely. And I think, I suppose, facing into that Dublin match, there was a lot at stake because there was a premonition that was out of your control too, knowing that, you know, the Carlow Offaly match was going to have an impact. But we had to kind of say, well, look, we have to control our own destiny to a degree. And I really, you know, from a management point of view, we pushed, I think, the stakes with the guys. We really pushed them to say, like, that this was as good of a championship match as we were getting, because there was a lot at stake here. And I was very pleased with how the kind of level of expectation that we put on them, and it really, I suppose, showed, you know, maybe they needed to pull out a performance, and they did. And, you know, a little bit of misfortune, look, we probably should have had at least a goal in the first half, and that might have been the difference. And, you know, when you're playing the last 15 minutes against a team in their own back patch, and Parnell Park has been a fortress for Dublin, and you're playing that with 14 men, it makes it very difficult. And like, Dublin were able to unload fresh legs onto that pitch that day, and that's what just allowed them to get home. But yeah, look, we're happy with the progress we're making, and the, you know, you're saying, well, we're getting closer, we're getting to the level. And I think that to finish that, Dublin are going to take scalps in Leinster this year. I firmly believe that.
Eddie, you know, you talked about taking pride in the performance regardless of the results. I'm curious as to what extent that's down to your own, you know, your philosophy as a coach. Like, I just realised, you know, thinking back even on Twitter, I saw you were kind of critical of the way Dublin set up against Limerick and things like that. Like, would you put as much kind of value in the style of hurling as you would kind of the results that are coming from it?
Yes, but to be very clear, I wasn't so much critical of Dublin. I just, the match as a spectacle was probably, you know, the context of the point I was making. And yet, I suppose personally, I do have a kind of an issue with, I just go, God, you know, it's very different. And I thought the evidence was there at the end of that match, because as far as the 65th minute, Dublin had only scored 12 points and a few of them were from frees. So, yeah, I do understand why teams would do that. And at times, we've tailored what we've been meeting. Like, I mean, I'll make no bones about it. When we played Dublin in the Wilds Cup earlier on late last year, they were threatening to overrun us in the first half, and we dropped the man back to help out with our backs, call him a sweeper, call him an extra man, call him whatever you like. But, and yes, I personally, I'm not in favour of that. But I suppose, like anything, there's times where you have to, I suppose, cut your cloth to suit what's happening around you. Personally, my own philosophy will be one of creating space. I think if you can work on your defence and have them good enough to deal with whatever situations that they're being faced with, then absolutely, you trust that they're able to do that. Like at one stage, at the end of the Dublin League match, we ended up with 2-on-2 inside our own practically 65-yard line. And I was comfortable with that. I trusted the two boys to manage two speedsters that Dublin had for the last 10 minutes. And I said, no, we have to trust that we're going after the match. And other times we'll do that. So it's probably a mix of everything. But I do firmly believe it's going to be very difficult, I think, for any team to win anything without committing to attack. It's obviously finding that balance of, would say, well, do you get your half forwards walking into midfield, or do you bring them back a tiny bit further? Then you're looking at the transition of getting back up the field. But obviously now the big emphasis is just on possession and using that intelligently. And I think that's something I would have been reared with as regards the team that I played with, that you always use possession carefully. You can't just throw it away.
Yeah, so that idea, like, to what extent would that have been influenced by you as a player, and then obviously as a pundit as well? Like, would you draw on those things to form your own kind of coaching philosophy now?
Yeah, I would. There's certainly, look, I suppose I spent the last couple of years analysing a lot of matches and looking at matches, and particularly it's an aspect of games I love doing, is reviewing matches and looking at you know your videos and saying, right, what can we learn from this, and picking out, obviously highlighting the good stuff, because I mean, it's always about what we've done well, and then, you know, can we tidy up something? And yeah, look, you're using things that you would have seen, and definitely stuff I learned from the other pundits as well, because I certainly don't have all the answers when it comes to setting up a team or anything like that. But I would always feel that, look, no more than when you're a player, you have to be willing to learn. And in that regard, Niall Corcoran is our head coach, you know, who played with Dublin, and he is really, really good. And, you know, we've probably met his, you know, our philosophies are definitely aligned in that regard. So that's probably made that side of it easy, and that I trust what Niall is doing, and Tommy Fitzgerald as well, that they know what they're about. So, yeah, look, I suppose it's probably been open to everything, really, as much as anything else. I think there is no hard and fast way, or there's not just the Eddie Brennan way. I have my own ideas definitely on how I want the team to set up, but I definitely think the players will lead that in how they execute it, and I think that you have to ultimately probably get the players to a point where they're able to make those decisions on the pitch, because when we're outside, they're the ones that are inside the white lines, and you have to have them prepared to deal with situations. And yeah, we will intervene where possible as regards maybe moving a guy, but I always try to say, look, you need intelligent players on the pitch. They need to make good decisions under pressure, and sure, look, that's what sport is about.
It's interesting that you say about kind of like learning on the job. I think it seems to be a team, you know, all the best coaches seem to be always willing to learn. And I'm kind of fascinated by the idea that maybe you could even learn in a role like punditry. But I'm kind of curious about that. Like, is that about kind of something that might mention about training systems, or is that actual analysis? Like, what could you take from that you can apply now?
Yeah, I suppose in that regard, you do, you're kind of always, you're always looking to kind of pick up a few bits and pieces, I suppose, on the job. And for me as well, I think when you look at what, you know, I suppose I would have looked at even Ron O'Gara moving off down to the Crusaders, and you're kind of going, here's a guy who has probably seen and won and done it all. and you're kind of going, okay, he's gone down there and picked up a few bits and pieces. And it's not just him, it's the other ones. I think it's you're picking up little nuggets of information off, you know, other people. And then on the day of a match, like anything, that's where you're going to learn the most, when you see maybe how the team execute different details. And look, I suppose if I felt you knew it all, I think you're definitely on a hiding to fail there straight away. So you kind of have to be able to be open-minded enough and say, yeah, we got that wrong. We'll tidy that up the next day.
Eddie, I was down in your part of the world over the weekend around Kilkenny and Wexford over the course of a few things. And, you know, the sun's out, kind of summer's on its way. And it's always striking when you're in those areas that every young lad or young girl, even now, you see, is walking around with a hurley. And it just kind of like, when I'm talking to you, it does kind of like, you do realise then that you're coming from, you know, the home of hurling, going to a county like Laois that, you know, definitely has its pockets and has its own traditions as well. And I'm not trying to dismiss it, but is a kind of a developing county as well. Have you found that, have you enjoyed that challenge so far of kind of trying to bring this sort of, you know, where it's second nature to you and nearly everyone around you all your life, and then coming to a place where you're probably trying to, you know, feed on the scraps of football a little bit?
Yeah, it's definitely a different culture in that regard, and probably a different, you know, maybe mindset. And like you said there, look, there is pockets of hurling and football, you know, blended through Laois, and it's very, very strong in those areas, and they have a grow for hurling that is, you know, akin to anywhere, and football as well. But definitely, yeah, look, there's obviously differences, there's no doubt about it. And I suppose at times, you know, in my capacity anyway, you're kind of sitting back and watching it, and you're trying to kind of, you know, maybe steer lads in the right direction and saying, well, you know, to be as good as you possibly can be, you know, you have to look at, okay, what's going on in these counties and what's happening. And like you said there, that is something that is very much striking. And I see it myself around Kilkenny, and you say, well, look, it's a good thing too for kids. But they do. There is kids walking around on the streets, and lots of them with the hurlers in their hands. And it's just, I suppose, like Anton, it's no more than, you know, going over to maybe England or Spain or somewhere like that, where there's they have a soccer ball, or New Zealand with a rugby ball, or whatever it is. And that's all it is. It's culture. And I think, you know, I see it's at home, my own club, especially. Like if young lads will follow what's happening with adults, you know, and if they see them, if they're kind of exposed to being brought to hurling matches, and then they will follow that way, kind of. And it's then about, you know, maybe polishing that up a little bit more, and maybe then when you're bringing young lads through, it's that they're kind of trying to get them to be open enough to say, look, what can I learn here, or what can you expose them to as much as anything else. And you know, I've seen it was at a couple of club matches in Laois, and the same as any other place, there's young lads running around with hurls at the back goals, and that's probably the best place that kids will learn as much as anything else. But yeah, there is, look, there's no doubt about it, there's a difference. And I suppose they have to say to yourself, well, you know, you're not going to implement a thing in the space of a couple of months. But definitely, I suppose, I would like to think that you try to share with the players maybe some of your own experiences, mm-hmm. maybe, and steer them onto maybe, look, the little add-ons, which I would say is so important in hurling. There's so much add-ons that you need to be doing outside of your collective training.
Yeah, that's actually a very interesting point. Like, so that's like, it's not just like it is. I suppose that's something when we've talked to managers over the last kind of year or two from other counties. I know I even counties at a lower level than Laois, a lot lower level in fairness. But you know, you're talking about, you know, lads turning up. Maybe it's kind of giving it all on Tuesday and Thursday for training, and then coming to the match at the weekend. But it's not kind of like the full time inter county gig. Is that kind of what you're talking about? That it's so much more than that.
Yeah, it is. I think, you know, and that's, look, it comes down to choices and sacrifices, and you kind of say that to lads, say, look, these are the choices you have to make. But the reality is, if you look at, you know, the talented hurlers, they don't just, that's not natural. It doesn't just happen. It doesn't get polished up. There's a level of natural. Some guys are just very good wrists. Other guys will be very strong-willed and, you know, mentally tough. And the combination of things, they'll work on their skills. Other guys, the skill side of it will come very natural to them. But the reality is, all the top players, and I've been fortunate enough to share the field with a lot of them, both within Kilkenny and outside of Kilkenny. And I suppose I've seen what the Kilkenny guys do. Like, nobody worked harder than the likes of Henry Shefflin or Tommy and guys like that. They didn't just become, you know, really good hurlers overnight. I mean, they went home in the night time, and whatever they done outside of collective training, maybe the extra little bits of getting to a ball wall. And it's even just as simple as going for a walk with the hurling ball in your hand, and you're just kind of, as we say, kind of, you're just messing around with the ball more than anything else. Yeah. And that's where you get that confidence that at the end of the day, your hurl has to be something that's almost like an extension of your arm. And that's it, there's a level of feel that comes with that. And that just doesn't happen two nights a week or three nights a week with a group. It doesn't even happen from 7:30 to 9:00 in collective training. Collective training probably has to get going at 10:50, where you're getting your dirty touches out of your system before the actual training session starts.
On that team, right, you know, there's a difference in kind of culture, but there's also, especially for Laois, there's a difference in kind of coverage. And a lot of the times we speak to people on this show and they talk about the fact that that might not necessarily, you know, come into their consciousness as a coach or as a player. But then it obviously has logistical impacts, like we saw last week, you didn't get your fixture list until really, really late. Like, to what extent does that kind of become part of your role? Like, is that something that you're kind of aware of right now?
Sure, it is and it isn't. But I suppose the certain stuff you maybe don't consume yourself. You know, you say, well, it's outside your control. You know, you could get in a flap over that and say, look, they're being disrespectful or whatever it is, saying, look, it should be backed off. But, you know, you look at maybe the reasons why that's happened. But generally for me, I suppose you look at certain things that go on are outside of your control, and you know, maybe it's down to a guy wanting to do an exam or whatever, because I know there is exams for some of our guys around the first round. But we had a fair idea. Look, we had from get go, we had ballpark figures, our dates of when our championship matches were going to be, and we knew early enough the weekends that were going to be on. It was just a case of getting the times. We had kind of been flagged they would be generally around Saturdays at 3:00. So in a way, you know, it didn't bother me. Yeah, one of them, the first one against Offaly is 7:00 on the Saturday, and after that they're all Saturday 3:00 as we expected, and we've kind of planned around that. So it's just a case of saying, well, look, we don't have to alter our time schedule too much. So I don't believe in getting, you know, and I suppose you're just waiting for confirmation of them more than anything else, and after that you just drive on and control what you're in control of.
Finally, before you go, is just talk about the Joe McDonagh itself briefly. It's a really interesting competition this year, because you've got obviously Westmeath, who are so keen to kind of get promotion, and then Offaly, who've come down. Like, from your own perspective, what success for Laois? Like, have you even spoken about something tangible, like your aim for the year?
I said from the outset that making the McDonagh final has to be your realistic target, and that's not kind of, I don't think there's nothing arrogant or stupid in saying that. I think it's the reality. It's the only show in town for us at the moment. So you know, you're looking into an Offaly team that have just come down from a Leinster campaign, who I think will be very, very hard bet in this competition. And then you have Westmeath, who've made great progress in the last 5, 6, 7 years, and they were, you know, maybe feel very, very disappointed to have lost that final last year, which was, you know, an entertaining game. And, you know, they'll definitely surely have a little chip on their shoulder this year, and they'll love to go one better. So you'd be under no illusions what you're facing. And then the other side of things you have to remember too is, you know, Laois went to Killarney last year, or went to Tralee last year and got beaten. So we have to go there again and exercise that goal perhaps, you know. And but that's the challenge that it offers. And then you have Antrim as well. So there's definitely no kind of handy match in any of those. But the reality is, this is our championship. And I've said it to the lads from get-go, you have to get comfortable with putting yourself into those situations and get comfortable with saying, this is what we expect, these are the standard we want to set for ourselves, and anything short of that is going to be failure for the group. And yeah, look, at the end of the year, whatever come what may, you say, right, did we get better, did we improve? Yeah, and they'll always be next year. But right now, for the next 7 or 8 weeks, it's all about, you know, getting to that McDonagh final. And then when that happens, if that happens, you just take it on from there. So that's where it's at for us, and that's I suppose what the expectation that I would have, and I think the group would have of themselves as well.
That's great, Eddie. Thanks a million for taking the call, and best of luck with the year ahead.
No bother. Thanks very much, guys. Take care.
What an evening. What a performance. One of the greatest wins ever by the Rossies. Up to Pier Stadium. Goal with 6-1 on to beat us by 12 points. What happened? The Rossies arrived into town. What did we do? We blew them into Galway Bay.
Brilliant stuff from Eddie Brennan there. It's kind of interesting that it's not only player, I suppose, development of results, he's also kind of talking about a culture there.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I'll be looking out for Leash a little bit this year. Yeah, funny, he was saying about the, you know, the Kilkenny lads carrying the hurley around, and that's like, you know, ultimately what they'd like to get to. But, you know, mentioning the in New Zealand carrying a rugby ball around, it's like, it's funny, you'd laugh at that a little bit. But I remember we were doing a rugby show earlier in the year, and I was talking about the Pat Lamb story, a famous Pat Lamb story that Gavin Duffy told, I think, when he came into Connacht, is that he gave each of the players a rugby ball to mind, basically, as a baby for the year, you know, like, and it does, it kind of sounds funny, and Gavin was telling the story is funny, but he was also kind of saying, like, you know, this brought us, like, you know, this gave us a responsibility, it was a good thing to do, and, you know, it was like we were always with the ball in our hands, and our mistakes dropped that year. And then we talked to Shane O'Leary, who won the Pro 14 under Pat Lamb, or on the rugby show, and I kind of said that as a, you know, oh, Pat Lamb the gobshite, you know, like, you know, and he was like, oh no, that was like seriously important, that really was like, it massively helped our skills, just always having a rugby ball in our hand. I'm like, you know, it does kind of go to Eddie's point there, like, you know, just kind of like, it is more than just going to training twice a week, like, you know, there is just sort of the little things 100%. That you'll do, just always having the ball or the slitter or the hurley or
whatever about minding them, or like, you know, like the sort of, this is your baby or whatever,
yeah.
Feed during the middle of the night or whatever. But like Gaelic footballs especially, you know, because they're so expensive, you rarely see, like, it's always who, you know, text messaging the group going, who's got the balls, which, like, you're driving around managers' houses looking for a bag of balls, and then they're looking after them because they're €50 a pop and they don't want them going missing. Whereas, like, lads should be like, there are, but like, there's always a kind of a worry that, oh, this isn't the same as the Neil's one, but there are balls you can get like for €10, there's a Neil's train over €20. Like, every player should have a couple. As Bernard Flynn said, he used to have a bag of balls in the boot of the car, and he couldn't drive past the GAA pitch without getting them out and taking a few shots.
Yeah,
like, it's such, we're talking about developing players. Like, lads will go, we talked about this actually during the winter as well, or like, you know, the amount of GAA WhatsApp groups that were set up for going to the gym, but there were no WhatsApp groups set up for lads going out to kick a ball, take shots. It does make a massive difference. Even if it was just something like, as Joe Rowley talked before, of learning to solo the ball flat out with your head up, like, just practice running around the place, looking up while you're soloing, rather than any of the great players, the Peter Canavans, whatever, they're the lads that you can see. If you see Jeremy Connolly, the McEntees, whatever, such vision. Because that's just simply because they're running around with their head up.
Yeah. When does it become work? Because that's what we do as kids, right? When you leave the house as a kid, you go, for me, it was like the hurley sitter or football, one or the other. You know, you were gone with them, a rugby ball on the odd day. You know, I'm sure it was the same for you. Probably always a game of football for you, Mark. You know, but you leave the house, you kind of do that. You're hitting the ball up against the wall when you're walking down, whatever it is, you know. And then you kind of go to organized team training, and it's twice a week, and it's like, it becomes work almost. And that sort of party, yeah, it just leaves. And I don't, it's like, I think it's the lads who make it, it's like, it doesn't, you know, they keep doing it. Like, it's still part of their lives. Like,
yeah.
What does Eddie Brennan, is obviously a man who takes his coaching philosophy very seriously, as we just heard there. What does he have to do to enter this conversation to be the next Kilkenny manager? Like would winning a Drummond-McDonagh Cup be enough? Say, for example, earlier this year on this podcast, we talked about Henry Shefflin winning an All-Ireland and what that might do for his own chances. Like, what would, in your own mind, what would Brennan have to do? Would winning a Drummond-McDonagh be enough to put him in that conversation?
Well, it's all up to when Cody leaves.
Yeah.
I think maybe Eddie Brennan's son
like, is, yeah, like, we're talking about a hypothetical world,
of course,
where Brian Cody is no longer Kilkenny manager. I think he has to probably do more, you know. I think that ultimately, when it's Kilkenny, what you've done at Leash isn't going to count.
Yeah,
because matter what it is, because
he had a stint with the under-21s,
yeah,
and it just probably didn't go as well as he would have hoped. But like, even if Fido Zicarlo like gets them up, they win a league next year. That's probably not likely if they're going to stay in 1B, but if he gets them up and they stay in competitive in the Leinster Championship, would that be enough to put him in the conversation?
I think he probably will eventually have to go back to Kilkenny.
Okay,
you know? It's like, but who is Cody? Like, how do you replace a Brian Cody anyway? Like, they could do anything. Like,
you follow the Man United model and you get a kind of a what would you call it, like a David Moyes for a year, for 9 months, somebody just to tide it over while...
So someone who's been around a long time. But
you're never going to live up to expectations. So you get somebody like him, like who's the David Moyes in the...
Someone that's been around a long time with who's done all right, but with no real success.
Yeah.
Cheddar Plunkett.
Cheddar Plunkett. Right, okay. Right, so Cheddar Plunkett's the new Kilkenny manager. If that, I can see it right now, yeah, absolutely. So he doesn't go too well. So they get relegated into the Joe McDonough Cup.
But then Leash is enough if Cheddar gets it. Brendan is back in the conversation then.
Okay, so, no, but if Cheddar gets it, then they have to get... So they go the bigger Moyes, next time. They go for someone who's done it all around the world, the Louis van Gaal, but he's a little bit older. I think that's probably an Anthony Daly. Or maybe it's Lochnan next, right? Lochnan, so then Lochnan goes, then they have to go in. They have to go for the cream of the crop, the man, you know, he might fall out with teams, but when he's there, he's doing well. The Jose Mourinho, Davy Fitzgerald.
Yeah.
Davy gets it. Then they fall out with him. It's gone. It hasn't worked out well. Kilkenny haven't won All Ireland in 8 years now or something. And then they have to go for a player who was there at their most successful time, but was never, you know, the top player, never a superstar or anything like that, but someone who was, you know, always a guy they could look to.
Fan favourite. Yeah. Who's that?
I think Eddie's too good for that.
Yeah. And so Shefflin is... Well, who
Shefflin's
is
definitely too good. Yeah, yeah. Like, you're probably talking about, like, a Martin Comerford or a... You know, maybe a very, very good, like a county legend in a way, but, like, you know, maybe never, like, a national
superstar.
Can
any of any super subs? Who was always on the bench?
Oh, that's a
Taggy Fogarty. That's it. There we go. He's going to be the fourth next Kilkenny manager.
All this.
Who gets said? Does Comerford maybe gets appointed director of Ireland?
Possibly, yeah, yeah, yeah. No, that'll be Noel Hickey, like a guy, a back from years ago. He'll be the Mike Phelan type, yeah.
All this is prefixed on the idea that what Man United have done hasn't worked.
So it's also prefixed on the idea that Brian Cody's going to leave nowhere, the next decade. So.
Yeah.
We're out of time, lads. Before we go, Mick, we've got some exciting news.
We do, because we are on the road, actually. Not this podcast particularly, but we're, you know, balls.ie is on the road. We're going to Glen Rovers, GA Curling Club in Cork.
Good win of the weekend.
They had a brilliant win the weekend, beat Middleton in the championship, avenging their loss from last year. Middleton were county finalists, actually. So they'll be in good form, I think, when we go down there. But we've got a great show. We've got Patrick Horgan, obviously current All-Star and legend of Glen Rovers and Cork. We've got Leanne O'Sullivan, who's won the last two All-Ireland Camogie Championships and is also from Glen Rovers, so we'll speak to them. And then we've got a legends panel of, get this lads, Shawnee McGrath, also a Glen Rovers man. So far I haven't gone too far outside of the club. We've got Derek McGrath, and we've got the one and only Anthony Daly.
Well, that's amazing.
So we're going to do that. We're going to crown the Cork Hurling Mastermind. Morris will be writing those questions. I haven't told him yet, but lots more on the night as well. So it's with thanks to Sports Direct. And if you want to be there, if you're in Cork, not just for Glen Rovers people, you can get in. If you go to balls.ie/GEA or check out our Facebook page, there's lots of information there as to how you can get a free ticket for the night. It's going to be absolutely brilliant. I can't wait for it.
For those listening and don't know, Derek McGrath is obviously... a fan favourite on this podcast. Mark literally sat upright when he heard that he was involved and has actually applied for tickets. And we don't know if he's got...
tickets.
Now, Mark's actually working there at the night, but we're going to kick him out for the actual event.
Mick mentioned the rugby podcast as well. You can get that on Wednesdays in the Balls.ie podcast feed as well. You can give that a review while you're giving this one a review too, sure. Look it. We'll be back next week, but in the meantime, take it easy.